Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to eTech's latest podcast drop. I have the pleasure of doing a good one today. Our title is Safety in the New Loyalty, How Trust and Safety in Operations Impacts Customer Experience in 2026. I am pleased to have Andrew Kovalev with me. He actually runs a company called Contia. I was very impressed at what I read. Not only is he the service delivery at this organization that actually builds managed services, you know, across integrations seamlessly across a variety of different client workflows, but Andrew came from Google, which is pretty impressive as well, but he actually understands how to optimize workflows. He understands what really has to happen in 2026, especially with all this changing stuff that's happening. So I am just so excited to have this conversation today to let our listeners know a little bit about more of what you should be prepared for in 2026. With that, I'm going to kick us off. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited about today's topic because I don't think enough people talk about all of the opportunities in a customer experience world, especially when it comes around trust.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. So listen, let's get right into it. Question number one. You know, trust and safety, a lot of times people talk about this behind the scenes, but it's so deeply felt from the customer side. You know, in your perspective, you know, what is the definition of good customer experience and how do you see it evolving as safety is becoming more and more part of the loyalty equation?
That's an interesting question. And I'm sure you could relate to that. For a long time, good customer experience, it was a synonym of frictionless. How can I buy this fast? How can I find this fast? Few clicks it takes to get what I want. And as we seeing that the digital space is evolving and becoming more complex, the definition seems to be pivoting from the convenience itself to more of a confidence of a user. And I guess I won't be saying anything new, but in 2026, a slick interface or slick UI doesn't mean much if user doesn't feel safe and the platform doesn't feel trustworthy. So in terms of evolution and how this evolved, it's first off, it's pivoting from invisible to more informed. So in the old way, things were done, like you've heard probably about shadow banning or silent filtering of a content. The new way, user wants to know why that piece of a content was flagged or why that account was not verified. And so users want to have this visibility into the safety processes that build more loyalty and more, I guess, affinity rather than just non-transparent environment when you don't really understand what's going on or you don't trust the platform. And the other thing is, what I've noticed is that the friction, like in all good old times, the less friction, the better. These days, the more friction actually. Well, I wouldn't say the more friction, the better, but friction is viewed as some sort of value add. And or there's such term that is being widely used, positive friction. When you get contextual warnings, like a prompt asking, are you sure you want to post this, right? Or this link looks suspicious. So all of those things might slow user down by a second or two, but it signals to the user that the brand cares more about their safety than it cares about its own engagement metrics. So the logic is customers starting to perceive this lack of friction as a lack of oversight rather than just trying to accomplish something as fast as they can. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, and I'll give a couple of examples after that, but safety, what I'm seeing is that safety is no longer perceived as purely as a cost center, meaning that trust and safety used to be viewed as a part of a customer support, and it's just an expense. Whereas now, safety is more like a customer, if a user is aware that they will not get scammed on this platform, A, for example. So they're willing to pay premium to tolerate less convenient UI, but they know that they will not get scammed on platform B. So that creates this sort of a safety net. And then the other thing is they become loyal to that. Like when you're trying to book your tickets, like for the airline, you know that if the platform handles your safety incident well, like they resolved whatever problem you had, it actually creates a higher long-term value or loyalty than the incident that has never happened, which is, I'm sure you have heard of this. It's so-called service recovery paradox. And so to give a couple of examples of what positive friction is, like in financial services, like I'm not sure if you're using this apps like Rocket Money, it has so-called cognitive speed bumps. When a user attempts to transfer something to a new recipient, the app might require them to manually type something in, like, I trust this person. And with this, it kind of slows them down, just make sure that they know what they're doing. Or, for example, if on a social media, there is an Instagram, I'm not sure if you're an Instagram user, but if you are, there is a function that says take a break, or content warning overlay that, and those overlays are no longer an interruptions. Users now report higher platform affinity because they have this sort of features optimizing for them or for their well-being rather than the ad revenue. Or, for example, in commerce, some platforms are adding so-called sustainability and ethics review before your final checkout. You might see carbon footprint of what you have in the cart. And so while it all technically creates a friction because it's one click more, that what helps users to feel more safe and more protected.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, I will tell you, for me, frictionless, I define it very easy. How hard is it for me to do business with you? Number one, pretty simple one. But you brought out a good point. I'll give you an example as well. So my wife is looking to buy something for our kitchen, and she couldn't find it on Amazon, the one she wanted. Couldn't find it here. She found the one she wanted with a site. And you know, she wouldn't buy it from him. You know why? She did not feel it was a trustworthy site.
Exactly.
She thought it was a scam. So really good stuff for, excuse me, good stuff for sure. So listen, like customers, you know, they don't always see this trust and safety in operations. Like you gave us a lot of good example, right? But think about the consequences. Like my example, my wife, she did not buy from this site because she didn't feel it was trustworthy. So how do safety failures shape this trust compared differently to service level failure by not delivering your product? You have any insights on that?
That's actually, that's another great question. So traditional service failure, like customer user experience, if it's a failure, it's more often than not, it is perceived as an inconvenience. Okay. Whereas safety failure is often perceived as a critical, something really critical. And in my view, this is a psychological weight of those two categories is fundamentally different. Because when you use something, like you use a digital product online or digital service online, there is a so-called unspoken contract, or you agree on something without, of course, it's unwritten, but there's some sort of an agreement that I give you my money and you give me my working product, if it's a service, of course, or if it's something like social media, then I give you my data, or you have my attention. And the social agreement on the other side is that you keep my information safe. So in traditional customer experience, there is I think I mentioned that before. So this is some so-called service recovery paradox, is when customer often becomes more loyal to a brand or a product after their problem has been fixed, or if compared to if that problem ever occurred at all. So safety failures, they create some sort of a stain on the reputation, and because it is tied to users' well-being, like actual feeling actually safe, and if the failure happens, it suggests that something fundamentally wrong with the company's technical integrity and whatnot. So, like, to give you an example, like, if you're ordering something online and they messed up your order, they'll just give you $20 credit and you'll be cool, right? If you have been posting something privately on social media and it has been leaked, then no amount of credit they'll give you, they will not yep. fix this.
Well, you bring up a good point. It's really like if you think about all the breaches, right? So a lot of people break into these companies just to get the data, usernames, passwords, and we see that. You know, it's a tough one because there are so many criminals out there trying to break in, as we know. These companies that are leaking out usernames, passwords, all that data. It's just terrible. You're right, because me personally, I've been involved in a couple breaches because I get those alerts. And yeah, it just makes me think differently about that company. Good stuff. So number three, so everybody's talking about AI. As you and I talked about, I published a couple books on AI. I love AI. I think it's transforming. It's there's a lot of good stuff about it. You know, but like when you think about where or when or how do you see AI genuinely strengthening the trust and safety of the operations? And where do you think there's still human judgment is irreplaceable? Because I come from a school of thought in my book. I say human in the loop all the time because I don't trust machines 100%. What's your insights on that?
That's exactly what I think. So the divide between AI and human judgment has an interest in safety more specifically. It has moved past the debate whether AI replaces the human judgment. It has become AI, it's more like an infrastructure of safety. Well, humans are, as you rightly mentioned, human in the loop. So humans become an architect of the intent. AI's strength is in volume, velocity, and it's multimodal in a sense that it'd be safe to assume, and I'm sure you've noticed that yourself, it'd be safe to assume that 90% of the online content that we're seeing today, it's either AI assisted mm-hmm. or it's completely AI generated. And that's the reason why only AI can keep up with that pace, right? So models can detect intent. We know that already. They can flag, like, for example, if it's a gaming chat, like models, they can detect intent. They can flag things like grooming behavior or hate speech that humans, because of the sheer volume of that. Or, for example, how it's multimodal is AI can simultaneously analyze live stream. It can analyze the spoken audio, and it can be analyzing the scrolling chat to find this coordinated harassment that is the problem for that specific area. Or AI can handle the trauma heavy work, like it can pre-filter very disturbing or graphic content, extreme violence, and that it can spare moderators from the most psychologically damaging stuff. But it can help to prepare a kind of a summary where human needs to step in. And then now where the human judgment is replaceable is, and this is obvious thing, like context, right, or sarcasm. While AI might struggle to determine what is crossing the line between satire and something like a cultural nuances and actual violation or actual when it's crossing the line. Or, for example, AI is irreplaceable in things like that require a gradient response, gradient feedback, because more often than not, AI is somewhat binary. So it's allow yep. or block.
Yep.
And also things like edge cases, like AI is very good for the average content, like 90% of the content, 95% of the content could be fairly well reviewed by AI. But in the edge cases, like something new happens. That's what we talked at the beginning, right? So if it's a new type of a deep fake scam, right? Only human, because there is no historical data for AI to be trained on. So that's where the human judgment is replaceable. Well, the other thing is accountability, right? So if AI is taking the decision on something and someone's livelihood is impacted by this, you have to have a human being accountable for that, like on the back end. So those are, that's where I'm saying this, there is no battle or there is no debate between AI replace humans. No, it will not, it will augment people's abilities.
I love what you said there because it's so powerful. So 90%, we all get it. AI, we know, has hallucinations. We both know that. We see it, which is why we both believe in the human in the loop. And more importantly, I think both of us believe, you know, all these people that are out there saying, I'm going to replace all your people with AI. I'm going to automate everything. I tell them all the time, you're on crack because there's no way you're going to do it. And I like your last part, accountability. Because what are we going to do? Is say, oh, it wasn't my fault. It was the machine's fault.
Exactly.
We know a human programmed it. Awesome, awesome stuff. So next question, trust and safety in an operation. Sometimes it's a lot more complex than we think about, right? So what are some of the most misconceptions that operations may have when they're trying to actually build out these scaling trust and safety programs that you're so good at?
That's a great question. So as I mentioned at the beginning, it used to be a paradigm where safety is viewed as a cost center, like it's a pure expense.
Mm-hmm.
And most organizations used to view safety as a sort of a tax on growth. But it looks like lately this paradigm has been shifting to a understanding that trust and safety, it's a revenue preservation or revenue preservation.
Like that.
Engine, because after all, users, if they don't feel safe, they do not transact on your platform. And so I guess the misconception is that it's not an expense, or it's not a pure expense. It is something that you can actually grow with. And then the other misconception in my mind is that you can automate everything and you don't really have to have a robust set of policies. You just automate stuff. But AI is only as good as the policy it enforces. If you don't have a robust policy, if you don't have someone to decide upon gray area cases, AI is not going to do. It will be either too permissive, basically letting everything goes, or it will be too aggressive, basically killing the engagement on your platform. I guess another misconception could be, like, I think it's logically ties in with the first thing, which is it's an extension. Trust and safety is an extension of customer support. To the certain extent, yes, but more often than not, trust and safety, it is a part of the product and engineering function rather than just customers. And the reason here is the divide between before it happens or after it happens, because customer support is dealing with stuff that already has happened. Whereas in trust and safety, you actually try to create something and prevent something. How, you should be asking yourself a question, how could, if we release this feature, how could this prevent from weaponizing this by bad actors?
Yep. No, it's really good because when you think about it, I think a lot of people are missing this part of it. You know, and you're right, because in the old days, I've been in the business almost 30-some years, and you're right, it's always been viewed as expense. It's really, now I call it table stakes. Like, you have to have all these things in order to have trust in that, not only your end customer, but the consumer. So there's this constant tension between, you know, to follow up on this one, there's this constant tension between frictionless experiences, which we talked about, and protective safeguards. I think you hit a lot of it, but, you know, how do leaders in our organization understand how you have to balance those two?
So you're right. So it used to be viewed as some sort of, it's a battle between, it has to be either frictionless or it has to be safe. But I guess it has to be a risk proportional friction model.
Like that.
Which is browsing or adding something to the wish list or changing a profile picture. Those should be as smooth as possible because it's a low risk. It has to have low friction.
I like that.
Things like changing your recovery email or withdrawing a large amount of money or posting something sensitive, that is a high risk. And that should have a high friction. So you, you make it proportional to the risk that you're seeing. And the other thing is the way to communicate this to users, because a lot of depends on how you communicate this to users and how it's perceived by the user. And if user sees a spinner, they're annoyed, right? You're seeing this thing spins forever and you're annoyed. But if you're adding something like verifying your security shield, something like says that verifying your security, then user feel they're protected. And in some cases, adding a slight delay with a clear messaging saying, okay, it's a security check in progress. That actually increases user satisfaction. It proves that the platform is working for them. And so instead of blocking the transaction, or another example, like instead of blocking the transaction silently, you give user some sort of a toggle. Oh, this looks suspicious. Would you like to proceed? Or would you like to verify via A, B, and C, whatever the instruments are available, so that the user feel like, yes, it's a friction, but it is to my advantage because it's something that helps to keep me secure. Or another thing is to give the user a control of their safety, like opt-in safety features. Like in the standard mode, you have a default safeguards for the casual users. But in the guardrail mode, you give higher security settings for high net worth individuals, or public figures, or parents managing their children's accounts. You give them the option to be even more have even more frictions, but that is a sort of safety slider that helps you to use the level of what safety they prefer.
Yeah, it's really good. I love what you said. Low risk, low friction. That makes sense. High risk, high friction. And I love your, you know, it's funny. I never realized this until you just brought it up to me. A little spinning thing. I do see that. And it's funny when I'm on my iPad, I do see a spinning thing and no words. And I'm thinking it's my iPad, it's my internet. And then now that you brought it up, now it's like, okay, this is all they had to do to make my experience better.
Much better.
It does go through. You're right. But I never, I'm always thinking my internet's like, I'm ready to call the internet company because this thing's spinning, but I see what it's doing.
Heck, that you're developer,
all he had to do is throw in some messaging for me. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, last question. What would it take to build a culture in an organization where safety, trust, and customer experience reinforces each other rather than making it a competition?
Great question. So that ties in with, I guess, what we discussed earlier is that so the trust and safety is moving from a pure cost center to a sort of an engine for growth. And so, which means that companies don't have to choose between growth and safety.
They love that.
They actually grow because they're safe. Like the example that you mentioned about your wife buying something off of the internet, you would probably go to the Amazon, even though you found something, you found a better deal somewhere else, but you don't know that company. You don't know if that will be safe. So you go to a safe and traveled path of using something of Amazon or whatever, like Zappos or whatever else. Depending on what you're buying, but that also goes in with safety by design. So what I mentioned earlier is when you have to be asking yourself, when before you design something, you should be asking yourself the question, how can bad actors weaponize this? And so safety cannot be a sort of a afterthought applied post-launch, and it has to be a part of the roadmap when the new feature is being developed. And so you probably heard about case modeling. It's just the same as developers when they do the use case modeling for the new feature. The same same way should be some sort of an abuse case modeling, how bad actors will try to weaponize or take advantage of whatever feature you're launching. And then the other thing is, maybe for the organizations, like you mentioned, for the leaders of the organizations, it is worthwhile thinking about a shared KPI between product teams and trust and safety teams to measure some sort of a healthy retention metric. Meaning, it should track the number of users that are active and report zero safety incidents during certain period of time, so that you know that it is a healthy, steady operation and a healthy retention, user retention. And then the other thing I would say, it is transparency as a trust signal, meaning if user understands why certain safety measure is in place, like you said, with the spinning thing. So instead of it just annoying you, it could say, hey, here's what's happening. We're checking this and that and verifying this and that. And so it's not viewed as a fiction, but it transforms into some sort of a trust signal. So you're sending your user a signal that your operations are secure, transactions are secure. And when transaction is for some reason paused or flagged, it would make sense to move away from a generic community standards, like we have suspended your post because of a community standards, and then it gives you a link, and then you go and there's like a bunch of pages of this very generic terms. But instead, provide, even if it's AI generated, but more like specific, and you can have human to verify that before it gets across. But we've like something more specific. We've paused this transaction because, I don't know, this link is known for phishing, or this site is known for phishing. Or would you like to learn more, or would you like to proceed on your... So you're basically giving this transparency, and it sends a signal that we care about your user safety. So this culture of reinforcement, I guess that's what you're asking about. And so in a digital world, if you aren't selling a social network or marketplace or a tool, you're selling a safe space, if anything, to perform certain functions. So essentially, if you think about it, safety is the foundation based on which everything is built. And then the trust that users get is a result of that. And then user experience is a vehicle that moving this whole thing forward.
Yeah, so I got some good points on that. By the way, I'm going to take one of them for me. So I have developers that work for me. You gave me an idea with the KPIs and the roadmap, because you know what I do notice? And you gave me some good pointers personally, so thank you for that, Andrew. The developers want to build, regardless what it is, any new feature, anything you want. Where they argue is when security comes in to say, let me double check, make sure it's safe, they butt heads.
Right, exactly.
You got the creative guy and the guy who's trying to make sure we're safe.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that. I wrote this one down for the KPI safety, KPIs for the safety, so I could give them both the same goal. Man, this was awesome. This was such a great conversation. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, we'll put your LinkedIn underneath, but any last comments before we let our listeners go?
No, I think that was a great conversation. Thank you for bringing those are really good questions. And that's what is happening right now in the trust and safety industry. So, and I'm good that it's moving from the purely being a cost center to a revenue engine. So it actually shifts the paradigm of how things operate, and hopefully bit by bit our operation, like when, as a user, when you go online and you feel a little more safe than you were yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. This has been a great conversation, Andrew. Thank you so much. You can connect with Andrew on LinkedIn. His details will be below this post. Thank you, podcast listeners. You guys all have a great week. And Andrew, thank you again for enlightening us on a lot of the things in trust and safety. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.